We bring you this special radio television broadcast in order to give you the very latest information on an amazing phenomenon. Just a minute, ladies and gentlemen, I think something is happening.
Good evening. I hope you'll excuse me if I appear a trifle excited.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs.
Whatever appears emerges as raw experience for those who watch it.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight.
Hello, and welcome to Sordid Cinema. My name is Simon Howell. I'm joined this week by Patrick Murphy.
Hey, Simon.
And Ricky D couldn't be with us this week, but we do have special guest Molly Faust.
Hello.
You may remember Molly from our rather contentious Get Out episode. I don't foresee those levels of clash happening this week, but I guess we may never know.
This is one of the least divisive movies I've witnessed in a while, so.
I've seen a little bit of division, but like certainly not of the fierce variety. I haven't seen any like fierce champions, and I haven't seen anyone say it's totally worthless, but I guess we'll get there in a moment. The film we are talking about today is Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. It's the new film by Luc Besson, based on apparently in certain regions extremely popular comic dating from, I believe, 1967, and I think published its last volume only a few years ago. So there's certainly a lot of hashtag content there to be driven from. We'll get to that in a second. I just wanted to plug stuff for a minute before we get into it. Obviously, do visit GoombaStomp/SordedCinema. Molly, are you working on any pieces right now?
Not for GoombaStomp, but you know, whenever there's something I'm interested in, I'm always definitely gonna be interested in writing about it for the site. So maybe I'll write about Good Time, maybe.
Ooh, have you seen that already?
No, but
yeah, it's at Fantasia. I would really love to be able to get down there and see it. Speaking of Fantasia, obviously our coverage of that is ongoing. If you ever get the chance, anyone, this goes to Molly and everyone else at home, if you ever get the chance to go to Fantasia in Montreal, I highly recommend it. Unless, of course, you find genre film fans like obnoxious and don't ever want to like interact with them, which I can totally understand. But you know, just as a showcase of film and like a chance to, you know, watch some really interesting stuff and occasionally some terrible stuff in a very like sort of rambunctious but also like film loving environment for a really long time, because the thing runs almost a month. I highly recommend it. And yeah, so lots of Fantasia coverage. And one small plug also for The Lodgers, which is the Twin Peaks podcast that I do with the fabulously talented Kate Renabom. We have some guests lined up that I'm very excited about, but I won't get into right now because I don't want to jinx it. Yeah, because, you know, the clock's running down on Twin Peaks. There's only, I think, 8 episodes left at this point, so we're trying to get in as much quality stuff as we can while we can.
It feels like just yesterday.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, it's been wild. Anyway, so no more mucking about. Let's hear a clip from Luc Besson's Valerian.
This mission is a simple in and out. Agent Valerian, you'll be running solo.
I only work with my partner.
Hi.
We're a team. Let's go.
Running nearly 20 minutes late.
Yeah, well, time flies when you're having fun.
Welcome to Alpha. The city of a thousand planets, where for hundreds of years, every species has shared their knowledge and their intelligence with each other. It's paradise.
Amazing.
After centuries of peace and prosperity, an unknown force wants to destroy all we have created.
Agents Valerian and Laureline, you have less than 10 hours to find the threat and eliminate it.
Let's get to work.
Is after us.
We need the two of you to be the guardians of our future.
That was a clip from Luc Besson's Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, and this is the part of the podcast where I'm supposed to give you a plot summary, and that's really, really tough, because there's a lot going on in this movie. Anyway, it's directed by Besson and written also by Besson, based on the comic by Pierre Christin, Jean-Claude... Wait, is that two different people? Yes, Pierre Christin and Jean-Claude Mézières. Essentially, it is principally set after a sort of historical prologue in the 28th century in and around a massive space station called Alpha, where many, many different species, including humans, sort of, meet up and exchange information and generally get into all sorts of shenanigans. And there's also, of course, still space exploration and all that good stuff that humans like to do. So there is a human government, and they have, emissaries and all that stuff. And two government employees are played by Dane DeHaan and Cara Delevingne as respectively Valerian and Laureline, who, when the film opens, have a little bit of a sort of will-they-won't-they dynamic that's clearly been simmering for quite a while. I mean, if you've seen a movie before, you kind of know where that's going. And then a lot of other stuff happens. Let's just start there. So, Molly, I want to start with you. You're a big Besson fan, right?
Okay, well, I've seen two Besson films, and I saw, like, part of Fifth Element on TV when I was, like, 8. And I hate one of them, and I love the other one.
Cool. So there's one thing I've already gotten
wrong.
Huge fan. Huge fan. I think by your standards, that does kind of make you a huge fan.
Well, I loved Lucy, like, a hell of a lot. Like, so I was super hyped for this. I mean, it's not Lucy.
No.
I'll say that.
Yeah, it's not Lucy. I was a huge Lucy proponent. I know that it's not everyone's favorite, but I really, really love that movie. And I think it did a lot of things right that a lot of other sort of action-y blockbusters get wrong. But that's maybe a discussion we can have a little bit later. So were you hyped for Valerian? Did it live up to that?
Well, nah, yeah, pretty much. I don't even know if I think it's good. It's basically like a Star Wars prequel, but like a little bit weirder in presentation. Like the big problem with the Star Wars prequels, at least from what I remember and from what other people seem to say, is that they are extremely dull, in presentation. Like they have all, like the same kind of, world building elements that this film does, very similar. In fact, like there's even, mm-hmm. there's characters that look like that look like Watto and talk like Jar Jar, but I actually kind of like them. So, but like it has, like that Bassani twinge, that like George Lucas just, can't really do. But besides that, it just like there's nothing really going on in this one. There's like this one conceit with like a like dimensional goggles that I don't know how much sense it makes, but like, that was like the neatest part of the movie. And then like basically the rest of the movie is like, it doesn't seem to really have a core. It's basically just a design.
Patrick, would you concur with this assessment?
I mean, I concur with everything she said. I think it's a movie that seems like it was written by 13-year-old Luc Besson. I think this is one of the dumbest screenplays I think I've ever kind of enjoyed just a little bit. You can definitely tell he's got a real love for this, and that kind of seeps through. I think that's what separates this from the Star Wars prequels, is you could tell Bassan actually cares. He actually thinks this is a good story that he's come up with. And that right away makes it just more charming than the Star Wars prequels. But this is really, I mean, everything in there is basically how all the stuff that a 13-year-old would think was cool, and how a 13-year-old would think romance works, and how a 13-year-old would think that action heroes and you know, government spies work. It's basically written by, you could call it the City of a Thousand Coincidences, because basically everything that needs to happen does happen for these two people, because Bassan didn't want to dream up actual logical ways for them to get out of problems. No, he was having too much fun. And that's kind of what I think about this movie. And when I look back at it, it's a really, really stupid movie. I mean, this is one of the stupidest movies I've seen.
I
kind of enjoyed it. Just because I thought that he really enjoyed what he was doing.
I mean, I would be fine with that. It's like, well, except for pretty much that, like, there's, you know, the core of the movie, which is Dane DeHaan and Cara Delevingne's quote unquote relationship. Part of the reason why I was so hyped for this is because I think both of these actors are really, really hot. Okay. So they didn't live up to it. Like,
they have no chemistry.
none at all. Oh my God. And then, you know, like the screenplay, like you said, does not help that. So like basically just like stuff is just happening in this movie, and I'm just like, and it's like, it's not, you know, cool stuff for the most part either. It basically, like, you know, there's stuff to look at, but the stuff doesn't actually do anything. And like, I wanted, like, it's more like the city of like five or six planets, really. Yeah. Like, if it was really like a city of a thousand planets, that would have been fucking something, but it's not. there's like eight planets in there.
Yeah, that, I guess, top. Valerian and the City of Eight Planets didn't have the same. Yeah, this movie should have been called like Valerian and the Stuff Happens. Like, it's there's a million alternate titles people could come up with. The best way that I can think of to compare it to the prequels is that it's sort of like watching the Star Wars prequels, except all at the same time, like somehow screened onto the same screen over top of each other. There's so much, like, one of the other complaints about the prequels was the way Lucas would just jam every frame full of information, and none of it really meant anything, and it was just sort of cluttering up the frame. This, I'm not exactly sure if that same problem, you know, is visually representative of what's going on with Valerian, but it feels like it's true of the movie in general. It's just so much stuff. Maybe one of the more interesting things to discuss is whether or not this even counts as a live action film, because there are like long stretches where I'm not sure if there were any. If there were any filmed elements, like obviously the that sort of prologue on the doomed planet is one of them. But there's other times where, like, you're just seeing all these CGI vistas and environments, and, you know, Cara Delevingne and Dane DeHaan kind of ambling around them. And I was really wondering to myself, like, how much of this did they actually use actors for, and like at what point do you stop calling something a live action film? That I thought was sort of more interesting to think about than maybe some of the stuff that was actually happening.
It's just not interesting stuff. I mean, like, it's like the sequence with the like the dimensional guns, and or not the dimensional guns, it's like dimensional like goggles and like a box that does it. Like, I mean, like, that's like an actual sci-fi concept.
Yeah.
And it's actually used pretty well as well. And then just like that's like right at the beginning of the movie, and then there's like nothing else in the movie.
I thought it was funny, Molly, that the one of the first things you said was that you were excited for this because you find the actors hot, because I think it was Tina Hassania in the National Post. One of her complaints was that this was yet another film where, like, an insanely attractive woman is paired with, like, kind of an average looking dude.
What? All right. Well, she does beat him out rather handily, but like Dane DeHaan does. I don't think he looks average at all. I think Dane DeHaan is like. I mean, I like, especially like, you know, in this time of Chris's and stuff. Like, I maybe it's just I like really sickly dudes. So
he is.
I like
is
the
that.
Time of Chris's. That's I think I might use that.
They're clearly like a much more like a European sensibility of what hot means than sort of a North American. And like I'm expecting this movie to make, to quote a friend of mine, 6 pesos at the North American box office, but it's not really aimed at North America anyway. Like, this is clearly meant for more of a European audience. And we know that because one of the first faces we see in this movie, and one of the funniest things I think I've seen all year, is the oh so tired face of Rutger Hauer,
yes.
Who looked like that may as well have been filmed over Skype.
It was nice seeing him though.
Yeah, it was nice, but like it was just like you he's like addressing an audience, and like he may as like, which as far as I know was just like the crew of this, like the crew on set. Let's put it this way, it won't be going in his highlight reel.
You know what? I had just seen the trailer for Blade Runner 2049 right before the movie started, so that was kind of a nice little link for me.
Oh, nice. It
feel warmer. And right off the bat.
I watched Ghost in the Shell like the day before, like I think it's the day before, yeah. And like that movie, like I mean, like even the original is Blade Runner, but like that this is much more Blade Runner than this movie, which is fine because like I don't think it necessarily has anything to do with it. It's just like it just has Rutger Hauer.
The thing that
I don't know how much of a comment that was.
The thing that I find funny about Dane DeHaan being cast in this movie is that apparently in the comics, Valerian is very much like a square-jawed hero archetype.
Yeah, like, I could even tell that from like just looking up Valerian the comic series and like looking in the cover, and I'm like, what the? That's not right.
Well, and also what's her name? Laureline is supposed to be a redhead, which I assume people were probably also upset about.
But dye her hair, good.
Yeah, wouldn't be that hard. But I don't know. I don't know anyone who's actually read the comics in real life, so I don't know if there's like Valerian and Laureline comic stands, like sort of, you know, littering the interwebs complaining. But since we've mentioned Rutger Hauer and his like strange small part, we should probably just mention how insane the casting for this movie is. Like, I mean, you've got Clive Owen as the army guy, their commander. But then you've got like Herbie Hancock is in here for some reason. And
I didn't even know he was still alive.
Yeah, I got to admit, I didn't either. Of course, we have to talk about Rihanna.
Yeah.
Because
Bubble?
So Rihanna plays a shape-shifting alien named Bubble, who's like, honestly, the use of her in this movie was maybe the most like, I can't imagine like reading that part and thinking this seems like a good idea. This is like absolutely something that I, international pop sensation Rihanna, need to spend my time on.
Well, she's like, what? Like, she's like a slave, like a, like, I mean, like she's like an illegal immigrant. And so like, she has to like be a stripper or something. And then like, so I guess it's like, maybe she thought it was a serious part.
She really gives it her all. I mean, at the most
does,
serious
yeah.
moment,
she doesn't
movie,
have a lot though.
She's either pole dancing or she's just voicing a giant blue blob for the
most
part.
That was a pretty good sequence. That was like one of the more inspired sequences in the movie.
Which now, sequence do you mean?
Her dance sequence.
Oh yeah.
And they sure make a hell of a lot about it afterwards. Like, did you like my dance? Like, yeah, it's good.
I know. You're one of the greatest artists I've ever known.
He doesn't have a lot of time to appreciate art. He's in space all the time or something.
Yeah, he's spending
Ethan
all
Hawke
of his time.
There felt weird to me too.
Sorry?
Ethan Hawke being there in that same scene felt weird to me too.
Yes, that was
super
weird.
That was Ethan Hawke?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, everything about it is super weird. You mentioned Valerian being too busy to appreciate art. I think we need to also talk about the relationship between Valerian and Loreline, which is super weird. Like, even like by the standards of like movies in which like bickering equals love, his like weird form of like extremely aggressive courtship is very not contemporary feeling.
Well, we're dealing with Bassan here, so I mean, he already has a movie about how like 13-year-old Natalie Portman is in love with Jean Reno.
That's true.
So
he really is. I mean, their relationship is exactly how a 13-year-old boy would want a relationship, would think that a relationship would function. That if
right,
because
it's like his relationship with his mom, right?
Yeah.
Mom, I want Pop-Tarts. Mom, I want to get married. Like, that's basically what their courtship is like.
Yeah, and he thinks it's just having the guy say, I love you, or, you know, whatever, I want to marry me. It's like, basically, he's going to say anything to get this girl in the sack. That's exactly how this relationship is playing out. And I don't know what her reaction is all over the place. Like, at first she hates it, but she likes it too, and I don't know. Like, you never really see their relationship. It would have been nice to come in at a moment where they actually had to interact with each other as real people.
Mm. I think I might be being too hard on this movie, because like for about 3/4 of it, I was like, hey, this is actually pretty good. And then just like afterwards, I was just like, I became increasingly tired with it.
Just like it was living in your brain and just making you upset.
It's like I can't do anything with this movie. It's
no.
Like it's got one element of sci-fi genre play, and then like, I mean, like a couple that are like what, like, ooh, she shapeshifts. All right, that's something. She shapeshifts into like 4 or 5 different fetish things. That has all right. I don't, this is a very difficult movie to make anything of.
The problem is
it should be just like a massive like clusterfuck at least. Like,
yeah.
It's not a clusterfuck, and that's honestly a huge problem. It's too coherent.
Actually, I think you're right. Because what it's like, the plot is bad. And so like if it was throwing even more stuff at you and like maybe adding some more subplots and just generally being, like you said, less coherent, maybe we wouldn't notice. But unfortunately, like, Besson is skilled and he knows how to put together a movie. Unfortunately, this is the one he decided to put together.
He ends up spending a lot of time on stuff that really isn't interesting at all. He extends sequences out, and then for the actual sci-fi things that could be interesting, he blows right through them. You know, like all the little tools that they have, or little weapons they have, like the little spider that comes out of that mouthpiece to cut him out of the blue goo. That's just there. It's just like, oh, he's got this thing. Like, that's the only function this thing serves. You have no idea where the technology comes from in this movie, and he doesn't focus on it at all. Like, oh, he's got a spacesuit that can crash through every single wall and whatever. Like, that just happens. All of a sudden, he's you know, Juggernaut from the X-Men or something like that. And there's no getting to know this sort of world and the technology in it at all. But instead, he concentrates on scenes that aren't going anywhere, and he extends them even further for some bizarre reason. That opening prologue on the alien planet went on way too long. I mean, you could have cut that thing out almost altogether.
Oh, you mean
it
the one
been better if you cut it?
It's visually stunning at times, but it doesn't do anything for the movie, or at least move it to later so that they can use it as sort of a flashback, or bits of it for a flashback, which they end up doing anyway. They end up having a flashback, so you see some of the same footage all over again.
Yeah.
Stuff like that is just not, he does too much of that in this film, and it makes the runtime much longer than it should be, and
also,
it drags things down.
Here's, all right, I guess maybe we're getting into spoiler territory.
Oh, who cares?
Yeah. But all right. So yeah, the alien race that we see at the beginning, who's like the most humanoid in the movie, which always has been sort of a pet peeve. All right. So they're like these like light purple like they're all like super effeminate. Like even like the king is voiced by a woman, or maybe even played by a woman. They're like their planet got blew up by the commander, I think, of the
Clive Owen character. Yeah.
And we don't know why. We don't know what was so urgent about, because it's a space battle that happens above the planet, and we don't know why the space battle was urgent. I don't know who they were fighting. I know that spaceship looks like it looks like something from Star Trek. Is that right? I don't know.
It looks kind of Trekkie, yeah. I mean, it looks like if a Borg cube was pregnant or something.
like a squiddy guy. That's what this big spaceship looks like that was apparently big enough to blow up the planet when it fell. And I don't know what the problem was. I just know that like he wanted to like shoot the thing. Eventually like the thematic thrust of this act is transferred to the afterwards, like his attempts to cover it up is something to do with like human selfishness, but that has nothing. It's not in any dialogue with any of the aliens, traits at all, flaws perhaps. Like there's nothing. It's empty.
Yeah, like, the movie isn't really about anything. Like it's got a lot of stuff in it, and you know it goes to the, as you sort of we mentioned this off mic earlier. The way that the movie sketches out like the arc of human history over the preceding like several centuries, like from more or less just after our time to like the current time in the film, is actually really artful.
Best sequence in the movie is the very first sequence.
Yeah, this sequence of like essentially just handshakes, and it made me think of we already brought up Star Trek, and it's cool, like that it's a film that, you know, takes place in sort of a more utopian space society than we're used to, or rather than we've sort of been getting lately. Because you know nowadays, visions of the future are all so gloomy and just fucking depressing, which is understandable. But like, you know, it feels like a crutch after a while that like you just start to assume that if a movie's set in the future, it's going to be like extra gloomy. I was thinking of this also because I just saw the trailer for Ready Player One, which anyway, don't get me started. But like, and actually the hologram, the interdimensional aspect of this movie actually really, like, it seems to connect very strongly to that element of Ready Player One. But that's a discussion for whenever that comes out and I have to deal with it. Speaking of, you know, sequences, I wanted to read you guys something really interesting about that opening, not quite opening, but that long sequence involving the interdimensional weapon thing. Essentially this was something that Besson had been thinking about for a very long time. And, I wanted to read you something from this Entertainment Weekly piece about it. So the writer details the scene, and then, and I'm quoting now, "If this sounds complicated, Besson understands that, quote, after I wrote the sequence, I explained it to the crew for an hour. They were smiling, but I could see on their faces they didn't understand it. And so at his L'École de la Cité in Paris, a free film academy the director opened in 2012, Besson recruited the whole student body to shoot a demo of the action scene's 600 storyboarded shots as part of their curriculum. Quote, I brought the 120 students to the soundstage and we shot the entire scene. They were the actors, they were the cameramen, the lighting people, the grips, costumes, accessories, etc.
I thought the actors were like old people.
Well, no, this was just so he could explain it to people. It wasn't the real scene. We put the 600 shots on the wall and one by one we shot them. They did everything in 3 weeks and we even edited and put in some temp music. And then the crew understood the scene.
I still don't understand what happened.
No.
It's cool.
It's like,
it is cool though.
I would way prefer, like, I hope that he one day releases their, like, the student mock-up, or if it's, like, in the DVD extras or something, because that sounds super cool.
Yeah, it does sound really cool, actually. And it goes to show, for anyone who hasn't seen this, just how confusing that scene really is. But it's kind of a whirlwind of neat ideas, though. So it's still entertaining. And, you know, for all the negatives I have about this movie, the reason that I can kind of walk out of the theater with a positive feeling on this is because he does have stuff like that. You never know what kind of weird, bizarre thing is going to show up in, especially a Bassan sci-fi movie. And it's loaded with scenes like that. I love that. That sequence is just a mess. And yet it's also very lovable because it's so inventive. And it is taking some chances and trying to do some new things.
I would say that it might not be totally empty, because this is, now that I think about it, like, the main thing that this film is quote unquote about is culture. Is, you know, it's got, like, mm-hmm. all these different, you know, cultures. Like, it has, like, you know, people displaced into different cultures, like Bubble is. I guess not necessarily people. And, you know, it, like, the opening sequence, it's, like, pretty much, like, a taken for granted completely or almost completely no dialogue vision or of this culture of the aliens whose planet gets destroyed. But, like, I'm not positive it has, like, anything really interesting to say about it. Like, I mean, I don't know if, like, warlike tendencies are meant to be part of human culture. There's not really any kind of context for that.
It also flies in the face of the opening, which sort of showed or was trying to say that mankind had grown beyond that, right?
And then like Loreline and Valerian's relationship has nothing to do with that. Like,
no, not a goddamn thing.
No. It's got, like, all these, like depictions of, you know, these cultures, like, you know, like the ones that kidnap Loreline at that one point, you know, like, that's what that is. And it's like, it basically, you know, is just like a run through of this, but, like, there's nothing extremely interesting about any of them. Like, the most interesting thing is that, like, it revolves around that little cute lizard guy called a converter, which is a very original name. Because it basically, like, the way he's introduced is, like, he eats something and then, like, he, I guess, shits it out a million times.
Yeah, he's basically the little guy from Futurama.
Yeah, yeah.
He's Nibbler. Nibbler.
And then,
Nibbler.
Yeah, and the way that's introduced is just, like, you know, with no explanation. And also, it's one of the more interesting sci-fi concepts in the movie.
Other thing about the cultures is that they're very one note. Every alien species has a defining trait to them. And that's, again, this just speaks to, like, the kind of writing that a kid would do. You know, you can't really develop an entire culture. So you just end up, this is comparable to the Star Wars prequels as well, where every alien species, they just acted exactly the same. One big thing is what defined them. You know, either you're the information guys, the whatever those alien things were, or you're the people who are at one with nature, and that's your defining trait.
Yeah, like,
it's kind of weird. And nobody's really separate amongst these species. Or you're the guys who, the aliens who serve weird food to their emperor in hopes that he'll like it. I don't know. They don't have any personalities. They don't seem like a people. They just seem like one
like big a quirk, yeah.
Mass. Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, the more I think about that opening sequence on the alien planet, like, the more confused I get. Like, it's supposed to act as a clarifying thing, but every single moment in that sequence is just baffling. Like, I didn't understand, like, all I can really tell you about that species is that they use these, like, insane energy marbles, which are supposed to be so powerful, as, like, morning spritz. Like one of them just sort of, like spritzes her face with it, like, in the morning, like it's makeup or something.
Yeah, and she was, like, washing her face or something.
Yeah, like, to them it's just, like, basically garbage. And and apparently they killed all the fatties long ago. That's like all I know about them.
Well, those magic pearls probably helped with that. Maybe they were also great diet supplements or something. I don't know. They seem to work for everything. They powered the planet and they washed their face.
There's got to be like CGI assisted. I've refused to believe that like real actors are that skinny out here.
Oh yeah, there's no way.
Yeah, that whole thing had to be mostly CGI. I mean, motion, you know, movement. They got the movement from the actors, but that's about it.
Yeah, there was speaking of, like, there's that one sequence where like Bubble is like covering up Valerian or whatever, and like they're impersonating like the alien that kidnapped Lorelai, and like it's got like Bubble doing, or it's got Rihanna doing like a CGI capture of like that like ugly like frog looking alien.
Yeah,
and like I don't know, I thought that was a notable moment. Like,
oh well, that same sequence also features, and I wrote this down because it was the only notable piece of dialogue in the entire movie. It also features Lorelai saying, "Oh, I didn't know you've had a woman inside you this entire time," which is like,
I don't know, that's not how it generally works.
Like, okay.
It's not much of a joke. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't at all.
No, it's not. So much of their dialogue together didn't make any sense, though. I mean, if that's what passes for flirting.
No. Jesus. Like,
how did the human species procreate in the first place?
It's like, first of all, she hasn't been there the entire time. She's not inside him. And, like, also, would it have made a difference? Like, none of it, no aspect of the joke makes sense. It's just like, but I sort of wish more of the dialogue had that sheer, like, what the fuckery flair to it, because then at least it would have been a little bit more memorable.
There's a thing about this movie, is like, so much of it is taken for granted, which I guess is appreciable. Like, I mean, like, you know, like, there's a, when, like the alien queen or whatever is like, my daughter, over Dane DeHaan's face, and it's like, there's no joke about that.
Yeah.
And there's, like, and it, really the whole thing with, you know, Dane DeHaan having like the alien consciousness somewhere buried in him is like, besides like, I guess Lorelai thinks it's weird, but like basically like, you know, like the fact that she does isn't treated, maybe it is like more supposed to be like played for like a comedy that like is audience identified, but like also and it just fails or something, but it more than that, it just feels like it mostly is just like Valerian is just like cool with it, and like it basically like he grows in awareness like with no real prompting of it.
Yeah.
I mean, that just feels like sloppy writing, but like it's also, you know, just like, you know, certain, you know, cultures just are what they are. They're not very much, but like there's a general like spirit of acceptance.
Yeah.
All over this film. And I mean, but there's not really much. I mean, and you know, like it works alongside Luc Besson's freakishness, and like it's sort of basically just like his attitude towards it, but like he doesn't really do anything interesting with it. He's just being Luc Besson at the end of the day.
Well, and that's why I can't really like be too angry at this movie, because it's so sort of good-natured, and like it's unlike, you know, a lot of other blockbusters, like it doesn't have that sort of sense of like self-satisfaction, or like some might call it smugness, or like it feels like it does have that sort of like utopian openness, like you said. What I wish that it had more of was like one of the things I loved about Lucy was like the way that movie gets its setup out of the way in the first like 65 seconds or something, where you meet Lucy and she's like, and you immediately understand that she's like embroiled in this thing. It doesn't really make any sense, but it's just kind of happening. And there you go, off to the races. And the movie was, what, like 90 minutes long?
That's the fastest movie I've seen in my life, and that's why it's so good.
Yeah, it doesn't waste a second. I don't know if you are a fan of Lucy, Patrick, but...
I again, enjoyed it, for its dumbness. Like, there's just so much dumb stuff in that movie too, but it was, I found it very enjoyable. And that's the thing about Bassan. I can tell he loves making movies. This isn't a product like the Marvel superhero movies. He, for his, you know, all the bad parts in this, he does have he has a good time. He's really trying. I think that lends a lot to it. There's sincerity behind this movie. I appreciate that.
Like, I mean, like I don't like, like I said, I've only seen like two and a half other Luc Besson movies. I don't know if this is trying. I mean, like, I think he's enjoying what he's doing for the most part in this. And like, there is, you know, a bit of infectiousness to that, but like, if he was trying, he should be able to pull something more off, like Lucy. Like, I don't know if this is like editing's fault or what, like, but like, well, this is,
and Lucy, like, Lucy had the advantage of being anchored by a really great performance from Johansson, who had like obviously a great year that year. And you know,
I thought you said
from
too.
Jim Hansen.
No.
Oh.
No. No, that'd be no. Jim Henson.
No, Scarlett Johansson. She was great in it. And you know, like, and even she managed to make some truly ludicrous material, even kind of affecting sometimes, like that incredible scene when she's on the phone with her mom. And like, there's none of that here, and I think it's really telling that we keep gravitating away from Dahan and Delevingne when we're talking about this movie, because like, neither, like, I've never seen Cara Delevingne act before. Maybe I still haven't. But like,
Paper Town. I actually like Paper Town. Paper Town is interesting. There's stuff to talk about with Paper Town. Cara Delevingne's not one of them.
Yeah.
All I know is the movie suffers every time the two of them are on screen together.
Yeah, but which is pretty fatal.
But when it goes off that beaten path, it gets really interesting. And well, like, sometimes when they're at least by themselves, it's interesting as well.
They're usually by themselves for the movie. It's like we for a long time we spend in the first sequence, it's like they're doing different things in terms of a mission. And then like the dimensional gun sequence, like Dane DeHaan is in the other dimension and Cara Delevingne is in a regular dimension, our dimension. And
notice how their interactions with other people when they're apart from each other actually seem normal.
Yeah. And then, we spend a lot of time with Cara Delevingne. And then after that, we spend a lot of time with Dane DeHaan, but they're basically just like rescuing each other, like trading off. And then like when they finally get together, like, and then like they meet up with like the purple aliens, it's like, it's just kind of like falls completely flat. Like, I mean, was I supposed to care about the purple aliens because they're a utopian society? That like makes me care less about them.
Yeah, they kind of just seem like dicks, to be honest.
There's your smugness right there.
I don't know how, like, clear they must have had some kind of screen test with the two of them where like they tried to figure out if they were good together or anything. Like, surely someone should have detected that it wasn't working.
Well, again, we're dealing with Luc Besson, who does not really deal in regular human emotion. Besson, he might be an alien.
It's possible.
He's all about the visuals. He found the two people that looked like what he wanted. And that's what it,
yeah.
And that's
what
hilarious.
They look like each other, for one thing.
Yeah,
I thought
they
were
they
brother
really
and
do.
Sister the first time I saw the trailer.
Oh, yeah. They're super sibling-y. And yeah, Sickly
well,
is also
probably,
a good word
no, there
for
them. We go. That's why he did it. That's why he did it.
Oh, so in his mind, they actually are siblings.
I'm sure of it.
That actually makes this movie a whole lot more. Well, now I got to go back and re-see it. I got to
rewatch with that angle for sure. I mean, the tragedy of this movie is that you need to watch it like six times to catch everything that's happening in it, but you would never want to.
Mm-hmm. Because ultimately you'd just be disappointed every time you catch something new.
Yeah, probably. And also it just seems so tiring. Like the idea of watching it even one more time.
Yeah, I'll never go back to this. This is not the Fifth Element for anybody. This is not the Fifth Element. It doesn't have nearly the weirdness, doesn't have the charisma that the actors, the weight the good actors,
just
actually.
Mila Jovovich. Like, you can't beat Mila Jovovich for charisma. Yeah.
And Bruce Willis, I mean, he was quirky and weird in this in that movie. He was everybody was great in that movie.
Well, it's also here's the thing, like that movie is like, I mean, there were still like practical effects like back then. Now, like, I'm not, you know, I'm not gonna like fetishize that at all, but like, just to have, you know, that sort of that tactility, this movie is completely missing. Like, this movie, like, it feels so much more like other stuff at the box office, despite being, you know, a genre that doesn't really show up in the box office unless it's Guardians of the Shit. And like, I can't take that movie seriously. I think it's disgusting. It's, you know, just like the spirit of the movie, like, not really, you know, it's not really hammering you over the head with anything. For one thing, it's just like a straight genre movie, which is very rare these days. Like, it still just feels so far off, so much, you know, more of like a tent pole than Fifth Element does in retrospect. Like,
yeah, it has that same sort of like that sort of grab bag feeling of like, we're just gonna throw a bunch of shit at the screen, whereas like the Fifth Element, for whatever issues I have with it, feels like a relatively like it feels focused compared to this, actually.
I think this is too focused. Like, I mean, the last movie I saw that was about throwing shit out the screen was Transformers 5, which I wrote about for Goombastomp.
You sure did.
Yeah. And like that movie's like whole mode is throwing shit at the screen. Throw shit at the screen until you can't take anymore. This doesn't throw enough shit at the screen. Like I said, it's more like the City of Eight Planets. You actually came up with that, but like, if it had really, really, you know, just like gone for it and like been throwing shit at the screen, I would have been like, this is, there we go. Like, give me an overload. Like, that's what Lucy was. That's why that was so great.
Yeah. The other thing is like, Lucy was super, was extremely smart about its stupidity. Like, the way that it literally, like, to explain its dumbest concepts, they literally brought in Morgan Freeman as an exposition machine.
Yeah, that was amazing.
And it was fucking hilarious. Until, of course, he eventually gets folded into the movie, which was also quite cool. Like, there's none of that. I didn't get that wit from this movie. I think that was another thing that was just like really sorely missing. Like, there was, I think, Besson's love for the source material, I think, sort of overrode his comic sensibilities.
Mm-hmm. He played it a little too safe. And he, you know, Molly, you were saying this felt like more like one of the other blockbusters, any old blockbuster that came out. And that is sort of the problem. It would have been nice to see him go full on, dive in all the way on this thing. It's the City of a Thousand Planets, and they don't really even focus that much on the space station, you know?
No.
The space station Alpha is just taken for granted as, you know, a symbol of cultural exchange. And, like, even, like, the cultures don't all get along on it. And I guess that's supposed to be, like, a signifier for complexity. It doesn't really, you know, work out.
No, it doesn't. Especially since, as you said, like, all the many, 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 many alien species we meet in this movie are all basically, like, here's our one thing that we do.
Here's the radical notion that the film is operating on. All the cultures getting together? Good. One culture genociding another culture? That's
bad.
The opposite of what we like.
Yeah, it's really too bad, because again, like, for whatever issues people might have with Lucy, like, that was a movie that like brought up like a lot of really interesting stuff, and if it didn't necessarily have like answers to anything, it was at least like evocative, whereas this isn't. And I also agree that it had an opportunity to really not feel like just another summer blockbuster, given that it's based on this like arcane property and feels like much more European. It does end up being like sort of tragically similar to a lot of other stuff that's kicking around, no matter how like sort of gonzo some of the individual pieces are.
which is
too bad. We didn't need one of those.
No, we've got enough.
Yeah. We have too many already. We've got three too many.
Anyway, I think we should probably, I feel bad because again, I didn't totally like not enjoy the film, and there were individual moments where I was like pleased with just how sort of like left field some of the individual scenes and characters and concepts are. But by the end of it, you're right, Molly, like it really shrinks in your mind. Like it just feels like kind of a whiff, like a real missed opportunity, which is too bad. Cause it's really not difficult to imagine a version of this movie that's fucking amazing.
Here's how I know this movie's quality. I preferred the fresh air getting out of the movie theater to watching the movie.
Oof. That's never a good sign.
I can't go that low on it, mostly because I just hate fresh air. But I enjoyed looking at this movie for a good chunk of it anyway. It kind of just becomes pretty formulaic towards the end. And that's why I think it just fades from your mind. It lost all sense of quirky at the end, especially. But for the good two thirds of it, I thought that it was fun to look at. It was fun to laugh at. And because it really has some of the dumbest lines you'll ever hear in a major blockbuster. Like Marvel would have never allowed this through. Their slick packaging would have allowed this true. Through quality testing.
You're right.
It makes it more endearing, though. That's what made me enjoy this more. Like, it's so how he could have thought that some of these lines were actually good.
I'm imagining your quote on the poster, like Marvel, but without quality control.
So yeah, that's that's a perfect assessment, because while quality control has always been a huge problem with Marvel, because it just sort of makes everything the same. Like, and it just focus groups everything. It's like, they'll like this. It's like, just like, I like things that actually have, a spirit and genre play. Like, I was hoping Valerian would have a lot more of, but you're right. It's like Marvel, just without that one element.
Yeah, yeah, which makes it superior to those movies.
It's not hard.
just once, I want to see a movie about, like, where the main characters are a man and a woman, and they don't, like, jokingly hate each other. They actually just hate each other and don't end up together in the end. Like, can I have that just once?
No, they can have, like, a massive kiss in the end, but it's got to come out of left field. There's just no way it should be building to that.
I think in my version, it just builds to a slap, and then the movie's over.
Oh, there you go.
That would be cool. Anyway, I'm imagining a movie in, like... It's not difficult to imagine a more interesting, more successful, more distinctive version of this movie, which is really, really too bad. Anyway, the movie's called
The Fifth Element.
So the movie's called Valerian and the Energy Marbles. Again, the actual title is so baffling. And the one last thing I will say about this is it's possible that Cara Delevingne just wasn't making an effort in this movie because they cruelly stripped her character's name from the title of the film, because the comics are called Valerian and Loreline, and
don't understand, like, she's in more of the movie than he is.
Yeah, that's probably true.
She should go back to modeling.
Anyway, the movie's called Valerian and whoever gives a fuck. I hope y'all have enjoyed this. Molly, where can people find you online?
I am at camera_angel on Twitter, and you can read the vast majority of my writing on letterboxd.com/vexpoet. I also have a few pieces at Goomba Stomp, so check them out. I'm pretty good.
Yeah, I actually really recommend that Transformers piece you did, because that was...
So do I.
It was...
Oh, thank you.
It's
a trip.
I haven't seen... I think the last Transformers I saw was the second one, which is like, if you want to understand the impact of a writer's strike, just watch that movie. And Quantum of Solace, I think, are good, good sort of reference points for like blockbusters that were at least in part made up on the spot, which is kind of a fascinating thing that someone should write more about. But anyway, it's a good piece, and I know that people really enjoyed it. I know I did. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter at HollowMinds, and Patrick, you run the NXpress Twitter, is that right?
I used to. Now I'm actually running the Sordid Cinema Twitter.
Oh, there we go.
We've switched things up a little bit, so that's where you can find me now, and I will be talking movies on Sordid Cinema.
Is that actually at Sordid Cinema?
At Sordid Cinema, yes.
Perfect. All right, thanks y'all for listening. Next week, Dunkirk, maybe? We'll see. Yeah. Anyway, talk to y'all later.
Hey, I work for the government. If you want to avoid a diplomatic incident, you better let me go right now. Listen, I didn't come here to get a makeover. I need to leave. Do you understand?
I can't believe it.
I'm not here to try on a stupid dress. Call your chief or a translator so we can at least communicate. Do you understand what I am saying?
Da Major Town, grande controle da Major Town, fique certo quanto à posição do sol, grande controle da Major Town. Veja os seus olhos contra o sal. Faça trilhas e descubra-se de vez. Faz bem.